Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Hello again and welcome inside our NBC Sports Washington podcast studios. The Racing Presidents podcast is back. Bob Trossett alongside Chase Hughes.
What's up?
And joining us from the phone, Todd Dibas, our Nats insider and guru. Fellas, let's get right into it. The last time that we were all linked up together as a trio was a cold, dreary night on Tuesday.
I was the only one without gloves.
You were. And, you know, a couple people actually were tweeting that you looked cold, by the way.
Yeah. But,
so the last time we were together, though, was Tuesday night. It was Bryce Harper's long-awaited return, and obviously we sort of know how that night went. It was not exactly the Nationals' night. Philadelphia came out in strides and droves, and the Nats lost that one to Bryce Harper after really it looked like it was going to go the Nationals' way to start. Oh, man, Scherzer fans them twice. The place is booming them hard, but that narrative changed. Now we are a few days removed. We're officially over a week into Major League Baseball season. The Nats have won 3 of 4. Todd, you're the closest one to the team. Do you think that, you know, there was a Bryce Harper cloud over the Nats this past week, but now is that behind them? Can they finally move past that?
I think they've moved away from it. I wouldn't say past it until we're at this point next week when they're coming out of Philadelphia following their first visit up there since Bryce Harper joined the Phillies. So I definitely agree with you, Bob, that, you know, Monday was all about, hey, the Bryce Harper game is coming up. Even Sunday, we were asking guys about Tuesday, which is a general no-no in our business, but there was a day off Monday, so we didn't have much choice. And most of the guys understood that, even though they were still worried about the Mets last Sunday. So there was all this setup for Tuesday. Then Tuesday was kind of manic. I haven't sent a paternalistic text to you guys warning you it would be cold at the Salt Line, and yet there we were with Chase Frozen Hands Hughes.
I was shaking in my seat.
Well, Bob and I were kind of, you know, like on Dumb and Dumber where he had two pairs of gloves on the whole time?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what it was.
Right.
Like, we were toasty, and Chase was like, man, my you guys have gloves?
Yeah.
What?
My hands are sweating.
It was a bold move from Chase Hughes for sure, and we do appreciate the Salt Line for their hospitality right across the street from Nationals
Park. Love the Salt Line.
Yeah, hopefully we can do it again. Hopefully we can get, better. There was a good crowd, but they were inside. I mean, it was cold. It was raining. We were under a tent, so hopefully we can do that again.
Yeah, they were inside. They were the smart ones.
Yeah, we were outside braving the elements. But, Chase, when you know, as somebody who's been in this market a long time and covered the team and covered baseball and different sports as well, what you saw Tuesday night in terms of, one, what Bryce was able to do, two, how the Washington faithful reacted and received his welcome back. Well, there wasn't much of a welcome back. And three, what Philadelphia did and how they traveled. What was your big takeaway from that night?
Well, I don't think it could have gone much worse if you look at how the game transpired. It was super fun early on. I mean, it was amazing theater watching Max Scherzer strike out Bryce Harper the first two times they've ever faced as Major League Baseball players, or ever in their lives, I should say. But it wasn't the Philly fans that traveled that made that night terrible. It was the fact that Bryce Harper hit the upper deck home run and had the bat flip. But, of course, most importantly, there was something that happened early in that game that kind of trumped Bryce Harper's return if you're a Nationals fan, and that is Trey Turner getting hit on the finger and breaking his finger. And now that's a storyline that we got to move forward with. But I think Todd's absolutely right that after this second series, which they'll see them very soon, I think then they can probably move past it a little bit more than they can now, because at that point they won't see the Phillies for a month. They won't see them for almost a month in early May. The fact that they've got two series against them so early in the season really kind of brings it into focus and makes it a really interesting thing to evaluate, where Bryce Harper leaves them, and it wasn't that long ago that he signed with the Phillies, and now he's kind of reminding them of what they gave up.
Well, you know, let's, as the Nationals should be doing, right, and as I kind of posed the question to Todd, let's move on from that, because the Nationals need to as well. They've gotten key contributions in the last few games that have come out in victories from some of the younger guys, right? Your Juan Sotos, your Victor Robles, and I want to start with Robles here today on this episode, and that is the controversy, maybe not controversy, but the question that is, where does he fit? Because, you know, Davey obviously has Adam Eaton leading off, and he's been mixing and matching with Victor. He has him in the nine hole. But obviously, when you talk about math and logistics in baseball, when you're in the nine hole, you will end up getting the least amount of at-bats on your team. So, Todd, I ask you, Victor's starting to hit the ball. What should Davey do moving forward with his spot?
Yeah, it's a fun discussion point, as lineup construction always is. And I liked how the lineup was constructed when Trey Turner was playing. I'm not so sure about keeping Victor Robles hitting ninth now that Trey Turner is not playing. Me personally, I would slide him into the second spot. I like Adam Eaton leading off for all the reasons that we liked Adam Eaton leading off prior. Kind of that's his role. I don't like Victor Robles in that spot. Much more aggressive hitter. But I do like him number two. Some speed there, some pop there, some different things there. Especially since Brian Dozier is such a mess at the moment. I expect Brian Dozier to get a day off Saturday or Sunday, and we'll see Howie Kendrick in the lineup. Howie Kendrick's in the lineup, he can hit second. I have no problem with that. Keep Victor Robles ninth. If Dozier is in the lineup, I would prefer to see Robles hit second. Move Dozier probably ninth. An interesting thing about Dozier is he's predominantly been a leadoff hitter all his career, and despite his power numbers, they had him at the top of the lineup. So you could make the same argument of, well, we want a leadoff hitter type hitting ninth and apply that to Brian Dozier. And you could also put him down there and, as you said, Bob, reduce his number of at-bats while he's struggling. So, you know, I think there are some things Davey Martinez can do. He argued that Brian Dozier was hitting second because he thought he would see more fastballs and maybe that would help him get started. We saw another bad day at the plate on Thursday, and we'll probably see him out of the lineup this weekend.
Robles has been super impressive. You know, speaking of Bryce Harper, and I promise to the listeners we'll refer to him less and less as the season goes on, but it stands out to me that the three guys that we're watching the most in terms of replacing him, either in the field positionally or production-wise in the lineup, are off to very good starts. Anthony Rendon, who's kind of, you know, the best position player now, is hitting the cover off the ball. Victor Robles is playing really well. And Juan Soto, who my dad refers to as Juan Sato, is also hitting very, very well. But Robles, he's tied for the most extra base hits on the team with Anthony Rendon. Two home runs already, both off Noah Syndergaard. And basically, he's been striking out too much, but when he gets a hold of it, it goes very, very far. Now, Victor Robles and Todd, you've been following this team as closely as anyone. You can speak to this probably better than Bob or I. Certainly, there's been some mistakes with Robles on the base paths, in the field. He's a young player who is going to have to learn. I think part of it is maybe a little bit endearing, you know, watching this young guy learn from his mistakes. But at some point, he has to learn from his mistakes because this team has very high expectations. But I noticed yesterday there was a play, and I don't know if anyone else really picked up on this, but he caught a ball in center field. I think it was a Noah Syndergaard flyout, and he clearly didn't realize that it was the third out and, like, kind of threw the ball into the infield and then started running in. That didn't cost them, but it's just like there's, like, little things that he's going to have to pick up on along the way. And, Todd, certainly the base-running mistakes have stood out above all, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you have an aggressive, explosive 22, well, he's 21. He's about to turn 22 here next month. And, you know, that stuff is getting the better of him. He's kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever had a dog as a pet, and when you tell them, they may just be laying there, but when you tell them they're going outside, they start going crazy. You got to put the leash on them, you got to hang on. And
you have to, like, spell the word so that they don't hear it?
Right, right. Yeah, so you're like, calm down, settle down. We're going to get there. We'll get this thing done. You don't have to be ultra-aggressive or lose your mind. So I think in a way that's kind of like they're trying to put a bit of a governor on Victor Robles. They want him to be explosive, but they don't want him to make errors in the midst of that, of using his athleticism and aggressiveness. And certainly players at this level are super, super smart, and little things he could get away with in the minor leagues, those are going to turn into base running errors here. Just like, I mean, I thought the Mikel Franco charge to throw behind Robles at second base was just the number one example of what's going to happen at this level. If he's too aggressive, those things are going to happen. He needs to kind of limit those things. And they've been, they've graduated from the coaching staff that has kind of graduated from, it's okay, he'll learn, to a much more stern tone about he needs to learn now if he's going to be in there every day.
He needs to learn now, but I do think that so far, overall, it's been good from Victor Robles. Those are things that you think you can teach at this level. What he's doing with the bat is a lot harder to teach on the fly, and certainly he's looked really good so far.
Yeah.
Certainly, and we will see what Davey, and we'll get to Davey in a minute. I know Chase has a few comments on the skipper. We'll see what Robles decides. I mean, you would think that the natural kind of tie, what you tapped off on the beginning there, with Trey Turner going down with that broken finger. Let's see if Victor gets a chance to go towards that top
and Todd,
end of the order.
Speaking of that, when are we going to see Carter Kieboom?
What's your date again?
I still don't think anytime.
Yeah,
soon.
I had the under from June 1st. I had him, I think it was May 10th.
Yeah. I still don't think anytime soon in this situation. It's still dependent on, once they have, once they have a timetable for Trey Turner, because they most certainly have a timetable, because once we're all aware of what the timetable is, because they're not telling us right now, they're telling us there is no timetable.
There's always a timetable.
Yeah, there's no way. Like, you never go to the doctor, and then the doctor's like, I have no idea what the timetable is. So, give me a call in a couple of weeks, and we'll try again. The challenge here is, of course, that there's no real way to expedite the healing. He broke a bone. You have to wait until it heals. There's nothing you can do about it. It just needs time. So that's the tricky part. But, yeah, I don't think we'll see Carter Kieboom still anytime soon. His defense is much too raw.
And just in case, guys on the other end, listeners, if you haven't tuned in earlier in the week, we are talking about the finger break on a brutal pitch that where Trey Turner squared up to bunt on Tuesday night, and the index finger caught it. Originally, it looked like it was just a foul ball, and it might have been both. It got the finger and the bat, but it just was an ugly scene. So hopefully, as Todd's alluding to, there's a timetable coming out soon. For us on the media end, and then obviously to get to you guys.
They've responded well, though.
They did. They responded well. So hopefully they will be able to kind of, sail the ship until Trey is back, because he was off to a hot start. So
and Defoe laid down the squeeze.
He did. He did. So let's transition on to our next topic here, and that is the bullpen. Obviously, it's been a topic of controversy, not only in this market, but nationally. A lot of people have been talking about, will the Nationals make a move? What's going on? Will Trevor Rosenthal record an out? Like, what's the deal here? So, obviously we're taping this on a Friday after a nice W against the Mets yesterday in New York, where Strasburg looked good. If you haven't checked out that post-game podcast with Travis and Todd, you can go into our archives and check that out. But, Todd, putting that game aside, where does the bullpen sit, and do you think, or I should say, when do you think it's, maybe timely enough to start thinking about shopping?
Think about the sentence you just said, Bob. It's an amazing one. Will Trevor Rosenthal get an out? It's not, will Trevor Rosenthal be better, or will Trevor Rosenthal be like high-end pitcher he was back when he had back-to-back 40 save seasons? It's simply, will he record an out when he faces a batter before he comes out of the game?
Baby steps.
It's ERA infinity and beyond, and it's just an astonishing situation around him. So they have too much financially invested in him. He's not going anywhere. The only place he's going is probably more toward the sixth or seventh inning. I do think they're right to wonder about Kyle Bearclaw. He has a 2.70 ERA. very, very misleading ERA. His inherited runners are scoring at a very high rate. So he's allowing runs. They're just going on someone else's ledger. He pitched well at all. And he also has options. So to me, you know, Austin Williams had a spring training. You don't want to put too much value in spring training, but he passed the eye test. He passed the number test. He, like, the things they wanted him to be better at, he was better at. His filthy stuff is just a matter of command for him. They seem to have all that together in spring training, but you're not going to add Kyle Bearclaw and tell everyone that he's pitching, you know, the seventh or eighth for you and argue that he's one of your important relievers, and then come out spring training and send him to the minor leagues and bring up someone most people aren't aware of. You know, but eventually the rubber hits always in this industry, and you have to make hard choices. And I'm curious if he's going to ride with Kyle Bearclaw since he does have options. The other question for me is also Wander Suero. So they have to figure out what they're doing with those two guys. But kudos to Justin Miller, who has pitched really well. He has two pitches. He saved them up again on Thursday and pitched another huge inning for them when the bullpen actually had a clean sheet for the first time this year. It's been an interesting journey through the bullpen already. We've only played six games.
Yeah, we're complaining about the Nationals' bullpen already. It must be April. I feel like we do this every year. It's the one thing that they seem to overlook in the offseason when they construct their roster. And, you know, I guess in their defense, most teams have bullpen questions going into the year. It's a very tough thing to kind of predict and put together, and especially if you're allocating resources everywhere. But this bullpen has been largely a disaster. They're the only team in baseball, only bullpen in baseball to have allowed more earned runs than innings pitched, 20 earned runs in 18 and two-thirds innings. And you compare that to the best team in baseball, the Tampa Bay Rays, have only allowed 2 earned runs in 28 innings. They have the worst batting average against, .353. That is higher than Tony Gwynn's lifetime average. So basically, everyone who has hit against the bullpen so far this season has been hitting at a batting title level pace. Basically, you know, Jose Altuve in his best year. It's been a disaster. Matt Grace is appearing in way too many games, 5 of 6 so far. The Trevor Rosenthal Infinity ERA is just an incredible stat. But the one thing that good that has come out of it is that he had arguably one of the best quotes of the season so far, where he said when he does get that first out, he's going to take the baseball and get it authenticated by the league, which is pretty hilarious. So at least he's got a sense of humor about it. But if it continues, I don't think Nationals fans are going to have a sense of humor about it.
No, and let's remember, too, we've detailed this on the podcast, just in case you're tuning in now, though. This is the first time he's pitched since 2017. Now, again, we understand. No excuses for not recording it now. But hopefully things are on the horizon there for Trevor and the bullpen that
by
goes
way,
along
Nick,
with it.
Nickname for him.
What's yours?
The cable guy.
Oh, my God.
Xfinity. That's a Comcast joke, folks.
Todd, he's trying to get sponsorship, I think.
I can't get sponsored by the company that we technically work for.
My phone just cut out. So did you say next topic, Bob?
Well, on that note, let's go on to one of your stories that just went live on NBCSportsWashington.com today, Todd, and that is regarding Juan Soto and the lack of a deal, at least what he told you up front in person, is that there have been no negotiations for a contract for the Nationals' second-year player, making his first full season, he's hoping, here in Washington after coming up last year and obviously having one of the best, if not the best, rookie seasons in Major League Baseball history. This comes, you know, in the midst of, Todd, on your story, as your story points out, we're in the midst of a ton of different contracts right now. It's really a slew, but specifically his competitor in the NL East, and that is Ronald Acuña Jr., just signed a nice and big juicy one. So what's your gist after the conversation with Juan?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, but I also don't want to make this sound like it's a pressing thing that the Nationals are doing something wrong or Soto and Scott Boras are doing something wrong. It's very simply, there's a lot of extensions going on. The Ronald Acuña one is the one that really piqued my interest and made me think, you know, I'm going to go ask Soto hey, have you guys talked about this at all? You know, has this entered your brain at all? You know, he told me he saw the news about the day I asked him was the day that Acuna's extension news came out. And I said, did you see this news? And he said, yeah, I saw it. And so we had a big conversation about, you know, have you talked to the team at all about an extension and that sort of thing? And he said he hadn't. And he's just, you know, he doesn't think about it. He just comes and plays baseball. And basically, you know, when Scott Boras has something, he will come to him and say, hey, I have something. Let's take a look. So, you know, this is more me asking Soto because of the climate, because we've seen so many extensions recently. And then specifically, we saw extension for Eloy Jimenez, who has never appeared in a major league game, and he's getting arbitration
years
bought out with options at the back end. And then we saw the Acuna one, which could be up to 10 years long. Because the team holds options at the back end of that. You know, it was an 8-year extension. So those things open your eyes and you think, hey, Juan Soto is just like those guys. You know, I mean, he actually has some pedigree, unlike Jimenez. So, you know, is this a thing on his radar? Is this a thing on the team's radar? I would say it's more, much more on the latter. You know, as I wrote in the story, I asked someone in the offseason, half jokingly, because we're talking about Bryce Harper, right? Where is he going to go? And I said, well, have you started talking to Juan Soto about an extension? And the person I was speaking with said, it's not as far-fetched as you think, you know? And I was kind of trying to make a joke out of it. And I was like, that's very interesting.
And that was before Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, that was well before. That was back in January. And this same person, you know, thought that extensions would be a much more prominent mechanism because of how free agency had gone. And voila, here we are, extensions all over the place.
Chase, when you look at what Juan's been able to do early in this season, and then do you look at it as, like, the fact that maybe Todd wanted to bring this up? Like, is your vantage point that, okay, like, you're putting these two guys in the same category because of what happened last year, because of the division, because of the hype, because of the friendship that we see, or is it because it's now's the time to ask?
I think it's obviously worth asking, and the Nationals front office should engage him on just kind of where he's at this point. Maybe you can get him for a bargain, but generally, I would shy away from giving someone who's had 1 year, not just one good year, only 1 year in the major leagues, you know, $100 million or something like that. Obviously, Ronald Acuna got around there. So that's a really tough decision on their part, and certainly there's other guys that they probably have a higher priority of signing. Hello, Anthony Rendon does not have an extension at this point. I don't think the Braves are really in that position where there's another player other than Acuna that they can maybe look at as far as priorities. So I'd be apprehensive to give him that type of money right now. Now, if he does it again this season, maybe even mid-season, if he looks like he's going to be an all-star, then certainly, because you could save yourself a lot of money down the road.
Well, guys, that's about it. Todd, did you have any other quick thoughts before we wrap up out of here?
No, like I don't agree 100% with what Chase said, but I do think it pushes out a valid point of just kind of leverage. Are your leverage versus risk, right? If you pay now, then you're taking a risk, but you're also taking your leverage. So How do you balance that? It's a significant gamble, and it's one that Atlanta took, and I'm curious to see what Washington does.
I have a feeling we could be talking about this on the podcast one more time. You got something else, Chase?
Well, you mentioned Davey Martinez, right?
I never went with him. Thank you.
Obviously, we're going to have all summer to talk about him and his job performance. It's something that is on the minds of Nationals fans by the pitch, it seems like, because obviously he was a rookie manager last year. Didn't work out for the team as a whole, and everyone's kind of looking at him for what has changed in the last few years. Betting odds have him is the most likely manager to be fired first this year. Now, I think we're still a long ways away from that, but I wanted to ask Todd, actually, like, what do you think it would require? Because I would imagine it wouldn't happen anytime soon, but do you think if they were struggling, you know, in June or July, that the Nationals could kind of shoot from the hip here and make a decision like that mid-season?
Yeah, I mean, that would be out of character for ownership, right? I mean, if you think about
it's usually the managers who up and leave, right?
Yeah, well, in mid-season, yes. And congratulations to Jim Riggleman, who has come back from the dead all the way back to the major leagues now.
Yeah.
For the past couple of years. So, you know, the ownership isn't prone to do that. There are financial complications with doing that, as always, as we always see across every sport. And, you know, I don't know how rare that if you make a change at head coach or manager or whatever it is, that all of a sudden the whole team dynamic changes. Like we saw that. Remember when Ty Lue took over the Cavs? That worked. But, you know, and when Mark Jackson was replaced by Steve Kerr, that worked. But you're also talking about ridiculous talent levels at both of those places. So I think this is a different situation. There are experienced guys on Davey Martinez's staff, if it ever came to that, that you could plug in there pretty easily. So, you know, I would be surprised is what I'll say. I think everything's, you know, is going to calm down a bit. And I'll circle back to what Bob said to start the podcast. It's kind of like you're getting through the mayhem of opening days and Harper's visit and all this stuff. And essentially the season is going to start next Friday when the Pirates come to town and everyone kind of calms down and everything settles off and you have a better idea what's going on with Trey Turner. And then I think, you know, everyone will start to go from there and see where we're at with clear vision.
Yeah, I think until then, you know, once we get up to that Pirates series, I think everybody in this podcast, everybody that's tuning in as well, probably will enjoy when they start to not hear the name Bryce Harper as much. We promise that time is coming. It's just so relatable, and there's so many storylines. So bear with us as we sort of push out with you, and we're with you. Remember, we are with you. We are pushing that era out, as are the Washington Nationals. Before we sign off here today, I wanted to share with you my conversation with Chris the Mad Dog Russo prior to Tuesday's game and Bryce Harper's return. Hey guys, now joined inside Nats Park, Chris the Mad Dog Russo. Chris, thanks for taking some time.
Always a pleasure, pal. How you doing? Good?
You're a busy man. You got SiriusXM, MLB Network. What are you not doing here?
Well, today I've been busy. You know, it was a radio idea to come here today because I thought back in when Harper signed in March, let's go to Nationals Park and do 4 hours on the radio show. And then, of course, MLB jumps in. So there you have it. Sure. But the radio will be good today. And obviously, you know, it's April 2nd. Yep. There's no Final Four discussion. Nobody cares about Texas Tech right now. So there's no Final Four discussion. The Masters is next week, and the NBA and the NHL are still a couple of weeks away. 10 days NHL, a couple of weeks NBA. Right now, baseball, this story sure is a Harper. Him back in D.C. is the story in sports right now.
You wear multiple hats, Chris. You know, we're in another hat. You just mentioned it. Bryce Harper, he's coming in as a Philly. I know you've been outspoken about this. What are your expectations going into tonight?
I think the crowd will be anti-Harper. The Philadelphia fan base that will come down here and they'll be noisy, I think that will agitate the national fan here. So I think the fact that he went to Philadelphia and the fact that a divisional rival, he went to the Giants, the Padres, the Dodgers, they wouldn't care so much. The fact that he went 100 miles away. Yeah. So I think that they will be annoyed at him tonight. And I think that maybe down the road, I think they will come to accept it. But I think tonight, the thing to do is to boo. So I think Harper will get booed tonight.
And then what about the fact that he signed February 28th? I mean, that's not that long ago, 33 days.
That's a good point. It's very good. It wasn't like he signed in November and they've had 4 months to digest it. Yep. It was not that long ago. So I would suspect that there will be an anti-Harper. It won't be A-Rod back in Seattle. You know, some of the old ones that were terrible, or Damon back with the Red Sox when he was with the Yankees. It won't be on that level. I don't think the national fan will go that crazy, but they will be I would consider more anti than pro tonight.
One more thing for you, Chris, before we get you out of here. How will this change off seasons moving forward? This was not your typical offseason.
No, it certainly was. It took a long time also to, you know, to solve it because of Machado signing late, Harper signing late, and everything else. You know, so, and then obviously all these contracts that have been signed recently. You know, today we have one with Acuna, obviously Blake Snell, Verlander, Arenado. A lot of guys have signed late. But I think the NL East got a chance to be a pretty darn good division. And we know the Marlins, forget them. But with the Phillies, the Nationals, the Mets look better, you know, and you got to figure the Braves would be pretty good. This would be a very balanced division, and it won't take, you know, normally you figure 95 wins, 93 wins may not take as much in the National League because they might all beat each other up because there's a lot of good teams.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Give us an intro. Welcome into NBC Sports Washington, the Mad Dog.
You want to give you one?
All right.
You ready? Here we go. God, you're making it sound like I'm radio nowhere or something. Good afternoon, everybody. Pretty good.
My man.
See you later.
I appreciate you.
You got it.
All right, so that'll do it for this edition of the Racing Presidents Podcast. For Chase Hughes, for Todd Dibas, I'm Bob Trossett, signing off from our NBC Sports Washington podcast studios. And a reminder, The Washington Capitals clinched the Metro on Thursday night for the fourth consecutive season and are set to host the regular season finale Saturday night against the Islanders. Lots more coming in that pursuit to defend the Stanley Cup title. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks for being with us.